eyes are blue. Shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room.
Welcome to the fifth West Harlem Way Race podcast. I'm John Kinnaston, and in this episode, we've got various items for you, which I hope you will enjoy listening to. First of all, we have my favourite blog post of the week, and this time it's a post on Dave Troman's site, so you can listen to that first of all after the little bit of music. And then the main item for this podcast is an interview I did with Duncan Watson. This was really exciting. Duncan Watson was one of the original two runners that ran in 1985, the very first West Harlem Way Race, when Duncan challenged Bobby Shields, and you'll hear all about that in the podcast. Duncan's been involved in the race over the last 25, 26 years, and so has such a wealth of experience, and we could have talked for ages, and hopefully we'll have him back for other episodes as well. But that's a really good interview. That lasts about 36 minutes, and Duncan shares his thoughts about that first race, also his role as director and as marshal at Llandovera, and just generally his thoughts about training for the race and preparing for it. So I think you'll find that really helpful. The next item is a little series that I'd like to do on following two people who are doing the West Harlem Way Race for the first time. And the first one is Caroline Gibson. And I've just asked Caroline a few questions about why she's doing the race and what her thoughts are, her training plans. And then the idea is that once a month I'll interview Caroline and see how she's getting on as she gets closer to the big day. And that lasts about 6 minutes. And then the last 10 minutes is a couple more lessons from me, lessons that I've learned from the West Harlem Way Race. So I hope you enjoyed this fifth podcast that we've done for the West Harlem Way. Also, just to let you know that people have been asking about an inspiration evening in Edinburgh that we've had over the last few years. And we pretty well have a date now and a venue, and that will be on the website hopefully in the next few days when we just finalise the details. But there will be one coming soon in March. For those who can get to Edinburgh, can listen to that and take part in that, which has been really successful over the past few years. So I hope you enjoy this podcast, and I'll carry on now, and I'll let you listen to what we have to offer.
No space to rent in this town, you're out of luck. And the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck.
My favourite blog post of the week, this week comes from Dave Troman, and his blog site is fromrecoverytobeyond.blogspot.com. David writes on his blog, "I started this blog in September 2011 to chart my recovery from an operation on a long-term Achilles tendon injury. I've given myself the target of completing the Lakeland 100-mile race in 2012 and will use this blog to track my progress, motivate me, and hopefully motivate others." Dave ran the West Harlem Way in 2010 and was hoping to go back in 2011, seeking to break 20 hours. He missed it by about 20 minutes in 2010. But unfortunately, this Achilles tendon injury needed serious operation, and so he had to miss out. I must admit, I take probably a personal interest in this one because Dave and myself are going to be training together for the Lakeland 100-mile race. We have four training runs planned over the next few months, and so I very much watch out on this site to make sure he's recovering well so he can show me around the route. Anyway, I thought I'd read out this post because I think for anyone who's been injured, and especially a long-term injury and coming back, I think there's a lot of really interesting things on this post that hopefully will help others as well. So this was Monday, the 6th of February, 2012, and Dave entitles it "A State of Mind." During the last week, I had a simple conversation with a colleague, but then spent a great deal of time mulling over my responses. As ever, my friend asked how my heel was feeling and how the running was going. Simple enough questions. It was later in the day, as I was training, I realised that my stock responses to those frequent questions reveal a great deal about my current state of mind. I always say things like, "I'm slowly getting there, good days and bad, and it's going to be a while yet." The thought in my head as I ran along was, when would I change this attitude? At some point, I have to draw a line and describe myself as an ultra runner again. That is easy to do in black and white within these blog pages. As soon as I complete a run longer than 26.2 miles, hopefully in about 11 or 12 days, when I plan to have an outing on the West Harlem Way. In reality, it's a bit more complex than that. Attitudes once formed are enduring and work at a subconscious level. In order to reshape the attitude that has formed over the last 6 months, I need to break one element of that cycle that makes the attitude so dominant. I feel that breaking the 26.2 mile barrier will be a significant part of this process, but I need more. I'm going to try a different response to general inquiries. Phrases like, training is going well, I can feel myself getting fitter, and had another solid week of training. These statements are all true, but I never use them at present. At some point, I have to stop hiding behind the recovery from the operation. When standing on the start line, there is no special category for me, nowhere to hide, no special asterisk next to your name on the results. You are only assessed on the result of the race. So, to start the ball rolling, I had a really good, solid week of training, completing a normal, easy week exactly as planned, though I definitely cope better with the sessions than the previous easy weeks. The recovery week I slotted in has made a real difference, and I'm going to make sure I repeat that at times when I feel sluggish, tired, or even just a bit demotivated. I found that I had to hold myself back at times during the week, looking down at the GPS and seeing that I was faster than 8 minutes a mile. The first 2 months of the training program, whether recovering after a layoff or not, are kept at a comfortable pace, and I forced myself to keep to the rule 8 minute mile maximum pace. This next week is classified as a medium week, where I intend to run 5 sessions with a total of about 45 miles, which I hope will set me up for the following week, where I'm going to attempt to run from Balmerhead to Tyndrum and call myself an ultra-distance runner again. I'm really looking forward to this run, as it is the exact route that got me hooked on the West Harlem Way after I ran with a friend who was training for the race in 2009. So if you've not read much of Dave's blog, I do recommend it, from recoverytobeyond.blogspot.com. And I say, I think a number of us would find some helpful thoughts in there about attitude and that point of where you feel you need to move on and put behind you the long-term injury that you've had. So thanks, Dave, for that post, and thanks for sharing your blog with us.
And you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place. Someone you can lend a hand.
Well, it's a great privilege to have none other than Duncan Watson for this podcast. Duncan's very kindly agreed to come over and for me to interview him. And I must admit, for me personally, it's a real privilege to have Duncan with us. Duncan is one of the two founding members of the West Harlem Way Race, and we're going to be finding more about that in the next few minutes. So welcome to this podcast, Duncan. Thanks, great Sean. To have you with us. And maybe just start by telling us just a little bit about your background, your running background, before 1985 when you did the first West Harlem Way Race.
I had been sort of overindulging in food and drink, I suppose, up until I was about 36, 37. I started jogging around Glasgow and quite enjoyed it. Felt good. Felt that. Stopped smoking, and I stopped drinking whiskey, and I began to feel really good. You know, lost a lot of weight. Went running locally, as I said, and I thought I'm going to enter a marathon. So I went to New York in 1979 to the New York Marathon, sub 3 hours, which was quite good. I was told that was terrific, and I thought that was easy. You know, it was relatively easy. You know? So I thought maybe I'll get a wee bit of, you know, I'll get a wee bit of a style here. Anyway, I started running longer and longer. I get fed up with marathon distance, really. Although I ran a lot of marathons, I started running longer distances over rough country because I love Scotland and I love the trails and the hills and did some Munros. I started running Munros and. it just became kind of crazy, because at that time it was crazy. People thought you were a little bit nutty when they saw you running about. You know, you said, how far do you run today? I did 35 miles. You're like, why do you do that? You know. And then, of course, the West Island Way opened in 1980, and I had a wee go at running bits of it, and I thought, this is great. This is really what I want, you know. So I started going up to Rawadennin and Balmaha and running up to Inversnaid and sometimes further and running back. And it was hard, it was tough, but it was good fun. It was really good fun, you know. Back, have a shower, a few beers. And that was what life, you know, that made me something to aim for, to be, get better. And of course, my health was improving all the time. Then I did another few marathons, and then I decided to run the whole way. So that sort of, that gives you a basis of my running. But I just love running, and I love running long distance over Scottish hills, yeah, particularly.
And then in 1985, you decided to challenge Bobby Shields. Tell us how that came about, and why you felt you wanted to do that.
Well, I'd done it a few times, run the whole thing a few times by that time, run it over a couple of days and 24 hours elapsed time, and I thought, that's pretty good, and I thought, no, it's rubbish. And then I did it non-stop, on my own, totally on my own, I was 21 hours, 21 and a half hours, and then that would be 1982, I think. 1983, the family backed me up, and I did 1959, 58 or something, because I had to break the 20 hours, you know. And that was great. I felt really good about that. And then the paper started phoning me and wanting to interview me. This nutter is running the West Island Way. Nobody can run 95 miles. I said, yeah, it's cool. It's quite good. And 84, I did it again, and I think it was over 20 hours in 84. I can't remember, sorry. But there was something in the papers. Somebody phoned me and said, there's something in the Scotsman about this Bobby Shields who had done the West Island Way in 19 hours and 12 minutes. Well, immediately my, you know, having devoted so much time to it, my competitive spirit just flared up, and I got hold of the guy's phone number. He's become a close friend, by the way. Bobby and I are very close now. And I phoned him up and said, do you fancy meeting me at 3 o'clock in the morning on June 21st, 1985, or June 22nd maybe? And he said, aye, I'll be there. So I hung up thinking, oh, what have I done? Because Bobby was, I think he was runner-up fell running champion of the UK, and he'd won the Ben Nevis race, and he held a record for the Cairngorm race, and all that. An amazing amount of quality races he had won. And who the heck am I? What have I done?
So that first race, then you met him at 3 o'clock. Was that the first time you'd actually met him?
That was the first time I'd
actually
met him. Wow!
So you shook hands.
We shook hands.
Yeah, and then you set off running. So tell us a bit about the race. I think for people like myself who've been involved in the last 5 or 6 years, we've got this story of this sort of history of these two guys who ran with each other. They got to Glencoe and then decided to run together and to help each other. But that's basically all I know about it. So can you tell us a bit, what was it like, that first race, setting off and running that first challenge together?
Well, we shook hands and set off, but we didn't talk much. I mean, Bobby's a very quiet guy. He's a very introverted guy, and I'm maybe a wee bit more extrovert. But we spoke a couple of times about silly things, but we just shut up, because I was concentrating on keeping with him. I'm doing the mental thing. I'm wanting to mentally concentrate. I've got to hang on to that. I don't want to let this guy get ahead of me. I've got to concentrate. I've got where I'm putting my feet. I'm concentrating and running. Right. I really wanted to stay with this guy. I never thought I'd beat him.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd stay with him, really. I mean, really. And then I thought, maybe I will. So when it came to Glencoe, as you've said, we went through Glencoe, and I was beginning to suffer really bad. I mean, I was feeling really horrible, and between Glencoe and Alta Fee, I said to him, "How are you feeling, Bobby?" And he said, well, I won't say exactly what he said, but it was pretty rough. And at the bottom of the Devil's Staircase, I said, "Look, mate, if we sort of join forces here instead of trying to, you know, beat one another, we could probably wrap this up pretty well, you know." So he said, "Oh, well, you've obviously got the ability." So we shook hands, and well, that's, I guess, some sort of history, which is very nice. For an average guy that just decided to do something different, to take on a champion and stay with him, I won't let anybody put me down in that. When I feel really proud about it,
And rightly so.
Biggest achievement of my life, in actual fact. Yeah. So physically, anyway. So we ran up the Devil's Stair. We ran up the Devil. As far as I remember, we actually ran up the Devil because we're elated at this newfound friendship, newfound the consortium sort of idea. And we ran down into Kinlochleven, and I was beginning to feel really quite good. And then it hit us, the ascent out of Kinlochleven, which is really a devil, you know. Mm. And I remember falling a couple of times, and Bobby said, "You all right now?" I said, "Yeah, I'm okay, Bobby." Knees bleeding, you know. I think I split my head at one point as well, you know. Anyway, it was rough. Right? And then we've got that long bit between between the top of the Larrigmore. And it was bad, man. It was bad. It was hard.
Mm.
But we had friends. We're running with some people as well, right, which isn't allowed now. But we're running with people, some good fell runners, then they were jimming us along, sort of idea. So it was great.
Yeah,
it was great.
Yeah, good. I think it's very interesting that first race almost summed up the that sort of sense of support and friendship about the race, isn't it? Even though you set off to race each other, you ended up as great friends and support and helping each other. And I think that's carried on all through the years. I'm sure that story could be repeated many times at different levels, you know, that sense of people helping each other and getting through it. Can you give us just a little bit of a sense of what the route was like? Obviously, for those of us who've only been involved in the last 5 or 6 years, the route, I think, you know, as far as I understand, is quite different. Can you give us just a bit of a feel of what it was like that first year and the first few years?
Yeah, it wasn't a dry day we ran it. It was dry part of the day, but what I remember is the mud. I mean, mud. I'm really, really deep mud. I pulled Bobby out of a pool of mud, and he recalled that to me. I didn't remember. He recalled it to me, and that was on the north side of Connick Hill.
Mm.
Now, you've got a path going up there, but it's a bit worn and a bit stubbly, but it was just a morass. It was real. If you look at our times going up from Drimmen to Balmahar, you'll see that we're 25 minutes down on today's times.
Right.
It was a really, that was just one bit.
Yeah.
The east shore of Loch Lomond was just, again, just a morass. It really was bad and dangerous in places. There was no real defined path. That really is what I'm saying.
Mm.
With regard to ascent, yeah, the route we took, we avoided some of the worst bits, and I can't remember the reason why we did. We took the shortcut round by Inveroran to. We avoided the hill at Inveroran. Because they were planting trees. There was no trees in that hill at the time, and it was just a morass. It was just, I mean, it was really deep mud. We just have been wasting our time. It would take us a couple of hours to go over there. So we went round by road. So that's a wee bit of a cheat, I suppose. But the whole thing, when I think about it and I measure it now, and after having done it a few more times on the new route, I would say we're talking probably a mile and a half shorter, and maybe 500 or 600 feet, not as much as other people think, because there was diversions in our route because of flooding south of Inverarnon, and we had to go way, way up a hill to avoid some cliffs, then a way back down, and there's a lot of extra ascent there.
Mm.
So it was a different route, so it's difficult to compare, isn't it? So difficult to compare. I think we did okay, though. Yeah.
No, definitely. And I think it is. It is quite difficult to compare the times. Probably 1990, do you think, when the path is what it's like now?
Yeah.
So those times before, as you said, I think it was a lot harder from what you're saying, but different rather than any...
There were no steps at coming off Conic Hill.
Right.
So, it was really dangerous.
You could imagine.
You could go down 50 or 60 feet, as we did do,
right,
on our backsides, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was dangerous.
Yeah. Okay, so after that first race then, when you finished and you were in the press as well, weren't you, for that, the pair of you? And then tell us a little bit about what happened to the race in the next few years after that.
Well, I invited folk to come in 1986 when we had a North to South race, which was won by Mike Hartley, the famous Mike Hartley, the Pennine Way record holder, still the Pennine Way record holder. He won it easily. There was only three finishers out of 11 starters. In 1987, we resumed south to north, and there were 14 starters with 9 finishers. I may have got this slightly wrong, but I won it. Did I win it? No. I'm sorry, I can't remember. No, I didn't win it. I came second or third. But we've lost the records of the damn race, right?
No.
And I'd lent the records to someone. I want this on record. I lent the whole file to somebody who shall be nameless, but he handed the thing back to me with a lot of stuff missing, and I'm really quite upset about that.
Because,
Now it's become quite important to me as well as other people, you know.
Mm.
Where were we?
Just what happened in the race those few years after that first one.
In 1988, I organised it and ran it again myself, and I came third behind a lady, which is great. Mm. I mean, why shouldn't ladies do well at this? They've got the childbirth thing, you know, they suffer pain, whatever you want to call it. It was great. Betty Hall, who's the ex-wife of one of my pals, Jim Hall, and who's also run the race. And... it was just great. I did just over 20 hours, and Dave Wallace won it in 1912. I can't remember. But then 1989, I organised that again, but with the army doing communications and a lot of help with the backup, and we had a lot of people. I can't remember how many. I think it was 74 starters or something. It was really great.
Mm.
I couldn't believe it. I seen all these people at Milgai Cup. I started this.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I went to work abroad, and I came back to help with the race, to help Jim. What's his name, Jim? Jim?
Sure.
Jim. Oh, I forgot his name. He organised it from 1990 to 2000. When Dario took over. So really, I filled in the years for you from 86 to 89, which is when I was race director, if you like.
Yeah. So can you tell us just a little bit about your own approach to the race, when you were training for it and when you were running it? What sort of things kept you going? And did you see it as purely a physical battle or a mental battle or a bit of a mixture or what?
Yeah, don't forget there was no real record of no real people to look to for advice in this in those days. It might have been, but I didn't find it. I just had to find my own way of doing things, and I guess it was just a question of getting your pace right. Pace is the most important issue in the whole thing. You get the pace wrong, particularly early on, as most people do. They get the pace wrong early on, and they always suffer later on. So I just get stuck in running longer and longer and longer, but training on the West Island Way all the time. I even bought a house in Morgai so that I could be at the start. And I owned that house for 4 years whilst I was from 84 to 88. And of course, it was great to be able just to go out the door literally at the start of the West Island and run and see how far you could go. And it would get gradually further and further and further. So training. Yes, I'd take various foods with me, but I found that I couldn't eat food. And I've actually done the race, the whole thing, on 3 packs of Dexasol and a soda scone, right? And people say that's impossible, and I say, well, I'll do it again if you want. I'm probably too old to do that. But I do remember going through Kinloch Leaving, and a guy from the mountain rescue team saying to me, Somebody said you're running this alone, and you've only had three packs of Dextrosol, a couple of packs of Dextrosol. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, here, have a scone. No, that's exactly. He was mountain rescue from Ken Local Even. I'd like to speak to that guy. So he gave me his number. He wrote down his number on a piece of paper, and he said, you phone me when you get to Fort William, because I don't want the team called out. So I phoned him when I got to Fort William. And that was, I think I did over 20 hours that time on my own, totally self-supporting.
Good. And then I think for myself, when I've been involved in the race the last 5 years, and for me, one of the highlights is obviously getting to Llandovery, because you know you're almost there, but it's also seeing you there with your bonfire. And that's certainly in the last few years been a great sort of focal point of the race for us. So just tell us a little bit about what it was like being the marshal there, and your thoughts about that checkpoint in particular.
Yeah, it was kind of nice to be asked. Dario asked me to be a marshal. I had done Kinlochleven, but I think he thought I was drinking too much beer at Kinlochleven, so he put me in charge of Land of Ra. And it's a hard place for the runners, Land of Ra, because they, you know, they're within 6.5 miles of the finish, and the thought of dropping out is very strong. And it can be a very cold place if the wind's out the wrong direction or right direction, depending on how you look at it. And then I thought, I'm going to build a bonfire to cheer people up, because it's a cold place. So we built the bonfire, and that was probably a bad idea. From the backup point of view, from the support teams, it was great, because they could stand there in the heat waiting on their people coming in. But for the runners, three or four of them over the years, at least three or four of them I know have dropped out because they were too attracted to the heat and the comfort, and they could not, their minds would not let themselves get started again. So I know definitely of three or four people have dropped out at Llyn de Vra, and I hope the bonfire wasn't to blame, but I fear it was, you know. But it's an interesting place, Llyn de Vra. I loved it. I love everything about the race anyway, so marshalling at Llyn de Vra was a privilege for me.
Yeah. Grace, well, I know I certainly enjoyed it, even though I tried not to stop too long and to get through. I think you're in a unique position, Duncan, in the sense that you've been involved in the race from the very first. And I didn't realise you'd run it before, actually. I didn't realise that you'd run the route before the first race. And so I'd love to get your thoughts on how you see the race now compared to when it started, just the two of you in 1985, and where it's at now. And just some of your observations or thoughts about the way the race has developed and the way people approach it now. Hopefully there'll be people listening to this who have not done it yet, and they're looking forward to their first West Harlem Way race. So can you just give us some thoughts about your observations on how the race has changed and where it's at now?
Yeah, I think it's great the way that, I mean, really great. Don't let me underestimate that. It's really great the way that, not just because of the numbers, but because of the way that we've got the website now, and you've got all this access to training and how people have done before and why they've done it, and you know what they felt afterwards. It's wonderful. It really is great. I really love it. I go on the site a lot. Sadly, the site's lost a little bit to
Facebook.
Facebook, which
the forums.
I know there's a bit on Facebook as West Island Way. I know that, and I use it, but I would still have liked it kept just private to the West Island Way. And John Kinnison, who's interviewing me just now, has done so much for that. I mean, I wonder how many people have finished the West Island Way race because of people like Kinnison. I really must congratulate the guy. He's just doing superbly well. But we've now got diets that are offered to us. But I venture that diet's great, and drinking the right stuff, and getting your pace right. But after 50, 60 miles, I think it all goes out the window anyway. Yeah. And I think John might agree with me partly, because I think you took 40 minutes off or something, went for a wee sleep or something like that.
No, I've not done that. Oh, I did last year, yeah.
And so my I know I've never stopped for very long. I just don't stop. But I think my maximum stops about 22 minutes over the whole period of the whole race. But the the offerings on the website, and I'm sure you could phone some of these or email these people as well and get other information about how to dig in when it gets really hard, and it gets really hard after 50 miles, really, really hard for everybody, even the top guys. The top guys and girls find it just as hard as we do lower down the field, right? So get all the information you can, try things, get your what you like and what you don't like, although what you do like today at 50 miles, you probably are going to spew up. You know, it's an incredible thing to get to trying it, and it becomes totally mental after 50 or totally psychological after 50 or 60 miles, you know?
It must be great for you to look back and think that very first race in 1985 and what it's become now. You know, obviously that was never ever in your mind, was it? Presumably it was a one-off challenge, and then it just snowballed and grew, and it's got to the stage now where, you know, people have to get their entries in time, and so many taking part.
I thought it was a one-off. I didn't think I'd race it again. I thought I'd run it, might run it, just because I love the thing, but I love the whole physical West Highland way. But an American magazine chap actually came to my door, didn't even phone me, just came to my door one day, 1986 I think it was, Runners Magazine from America, and said, could we interview you about the West Highland way? You raced this guy? And I said, yeah, come in. And we had a wee chat, and they were supposed to send me a copy of the report, but they never sent me a copy of the American, that was American Runners World, I think it was, which was only available in America at that time. And I thought, hey, this is great. Somebody's really interested in this thing. You know? So that's when I decided to do the offer open to 86 again. So what's the question again, Jack?
Well, I was just saying it must be great looking back and seeing that first race, the way it's become such a big race now. It must be a real source of pride for you.
I'm delighted that so many people are doing it, achieving it, and then look in their faces at the prize giving. Or the beer afterwards. It's just absolutely beautiful. Yeah. It really is wonderful.
And it certainly is. It's one of those races where everyone is a winner, aren't they? You know, if you finish the West Highland Way race, then you deserve your goblets, and you deserve, doesn't matter what time you've taken.
I think we should also mention people who drop out aren't losers either, by the way. Just getting to the start line is a battle, remember. Yes. It is difficult getting the training right and getting there, and it's difficult to organise your backup, and maybe you've come from abroad or come from further down the UK, and it's difficult to organise these things. So I got to take my hat off to anybody just appearing at the start line. To get past 50 miles is an achievement, but maybe you shouldn't be starting if you know you can't go 50 miles.
I'd like to ask you, Duncan, maybe some your thoughts on training for the West Highland Way. I think that's one of the things that we've all, when we first take on this challenge of running 95 miles, just how do you train for it? So can you just maybe share from your vast experience some of your thoughts of training?
I'm maybe not the best person to ask, because I'm inclined to run mentally rather than physically. I mean, I know I need to do mileage. So my answer to your question is simple. Mileage and pace. Mileage and pace, both during and before the race. Get your mileage up. Really long, slow. Get some speed training in, because I've only lately started doing that, and it's making a difference to me. So at 69 years of age, so maybe I'm doing something right after all those years. But you've got to get the mileage in, and you're going to get the pace right. People run off at the start, and I know that by the time they've got to Carbeth, they've already lessen their chances of breaking 20 hours or breaking 24 hours by several percent, 5, 6, 7, 10% maybe, because they go off too quickly. Yeah. Hold back. You know the pace you need to do to get your time. Stick at it.
Yeah.
Remember, you've got a long way to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
It softens up, but it hardens up later on. It's soft at the beginning.
Yeah. No, that's really helpful. Now, I know a couple of years ago, in 2010, when it was the 25th anniversary of the race, that both yourself and Bobby came back. And again, it was just great having you there, setting off the race and leading us. But it didn't quite go to plan, did it? So can you tell us a little bit about what happened to that race?
Yeah. So those of you who doubt me or doubt my abilities or what I see, I can do, I was 67 years of age, right? And I got to the first kissing gate at the bottom of the drive below the house at what's the name of the whiskey?
Dungoyne,
right? And I went through the kissing gate. I lifted my left foot and caught it in the bottom of the V, right? I then lifted my right foot to compensate and went off to the right and fell head over heels.
What, this side of the gate? Did you go through the gate?
I went through the gate.
Through the gate.
So if you know it, there's a support barrier with two 4x4 fence posts, right, supporting the bank from the river, right? And I went head over heels and crunched down on top of one of those stakes, right? Oh. Quite hard, right? Yeah. And I thought, that didn't sound too good. Anyway, I picked myself up, and these things initially, you've got a shock situation, so they don't actually hurt that much at first. So I was just winded a bit, right? So I ran on. Some guys came alongside and said, "You're running funny." And I said, "Yeah, I was just at a fall there." And anyway, I kept going, I was getting slower and slower and slower. And eventually I got to Balmaha, and I got to the top of Conic Hill, and Jim Hall, my backup, was waiting there saying, "Well, look, don't, you're not going to make the cutoff. You know, you better just drop out, you know." And sadly, I had to drop out with two broken ribs, which was quite painful. So I just want you to know that. All of you guys that doubted me, thinking I just turned up for the Duncan versus Bobby battle 25 years later.
Yeah. Got a shame, because Bobby had to drop out as well, didn't he?
Yeah, Bobby struck his head on a tree, I think it was, but he also suffered in other ways. But anyway, he was out at Inverarnon, I think, sadly.
Yeah. Okay, so that was 2 years ago, and I know when you arrived today, you'd just been for a run from Balmaha to Inversnaid back, and feeling good. So any thoughts of doing the race again?
an intentional silence there. I don't know. I'd love to do it again, and I can get an open entry up until the race anyway, because we're allowed that. Bobby and I are both allowed to enter up to any time up to the race. We still have to pay the money, mind you. But on a scale of 10, the possibilities just now are about 50-50.
Okay.
So 5 out of 10.
Right.
I'd love to do that.
Okay. Again. Well, look, if it becomes 10 out of 10, will you promise to come back and do another interview before the race?
I'll do one during the race if you want. Oh, no. As long as it's after London.
Excellent. Well, that's something to whet our appetite. Another Duncan Watson attempt at the West Harlan Way. Well, thank you so much for being willing to be interviewed today. And just to finish with, I've got some quick-fire questions. Oh. So these are the ones that we've used before with different folks.
Nothing about David in this, no?
Nothing about?
Dave. Pirate.
Oh, if you want to. Do you want to speak about him?
No, I don't want to think that anybody wants to speak about him. He's a pirate.
Okay, so shoes. Do you wear road shoes or trail shoes?
Well, my choice would be road shoes with some tread on them. But remember, Conic Hill is dangerous on descent before the steps anyway. So you might want to change shoes even. Yeah.
Okay. Food. Have you got a favourite food besides your Dextrol to keep you going?
I suppose a banana now and again. But that wee scone was quite nice. So I suppose a wee scone and a cup of tea. A hot sweet tea, right? Can be very nice as well, yeah.
Okay. If you're running with water, do you have a hydration pack, or would you rather have a water bottle?
I never carry water. I drink from streams. I know I'm told that there's some bug can infest your brain if you drink from streams, but I would still not carry anything. No, it's just weight to carry. You can drink from streams.
Right.
Although that might be bad advice. Seek medical advice.
So the next question then, water or energy drink, you don't carry either?
No, but I'll take energy drink. But
at the checkpoints,
Maybe I will this year if I do the race this year. Maybe I would carry a small bottle of energy drink. You know?
Right. What about salt tablets? Would you take salt tablets?
No problem.
No,
I don't. I've never used them, and I've never felt the need for them.
No problem with cramps or anything.
The doctors and the physios say no need if you've got a good balanced diet.
Yeah, good.
If you get cramps, I cover that by saying if people suffer from cramps regularly, I think that maybe salt. Yeah. But I've never suffered from cramps or blisters. Never had a blister.
Wow.
Never had a blister in all the time running the way. Never had a blister.
That's incredible. So
never had a blister really. Like I folded my sock once during a marathon and I got a bit of a blister. I just don't blister.
Yeah. Excellent. Very good. What about when you're running? Do you run with a watch, a Garmin, or do you tend to try and run by feel?
I carry the watch. Yeah, I think it's important to know if you've set goals, right? Not goals, so much as times. You set times for certain places. Yeah, it'd be handy to know how you're doing. Mm. And then if you're carrying a mobile phone, maybe you could phone your backup and let them know how you're getting on. If you're terribly late, it might be helpful. But a Garmin, I don't see the need for a Garmin.
Right.
I know people who use them all the time, but. Mm. Not for me. No.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, this is personal. This is what your views. What about your support crew? Would you have one team or two teams?
One team.
One team.
Jim Hall and his lady friend. Jim Hall's an ex-runner of the West Highland Way, and his ex-wife used to hold the record. Betty Hall used to hold the record, the ladies' record.
Yeah.
So one team.
Yeah,
one team only.
Right. Have you got a favourite section of the route?
I think it's got to be the East Shore of Loughlomond. Yeah. Having run it today, it's so beautiful. Misty today, quite cold, but it was just it's just a beautiful, even with the smell of the goats, you know.
Yeah. What about when you're running? Do you listen to music or books or anything, or do you like just have the natural sounds?
I use music from time to time. You can get fed up with music. It can work mentally. It can sort of upset you sometimes. It makes you feel funny, and you just take it off and put it away and put it back on again later.
Mm. Yeah. Have you got a favourite mantra to keep you going when it's really tough, and something just to keep your mind?
Shall I tell you something, right? I just try and think nice thoughts.
Okay.
Nice things, nice. And something else, here's a wee idea for all you people listening, if you're listening. and that is, when I felt low and I felt really down, I take some very deep breaths of oxygen. Right. Not oxygen, of air, and get more oxygen, and immediately I seem to feel better. Now maybe that just works for me, but try it, folks, because it might help.
I'll definitely be trying that one. What thing do you look forward to most once the race is over?
Beer. Sorry, John.
No, that's fine. Yeah. Just the one.
I can drink a lot of beer without it really affecting me. I've just got a funny metabolism. I like a lot of beer.
Okay.
I wouldn't drink beer while I was running, though. I think that alcohol while you're running is bad. I think alcohol's probably bad for you anyway. It just doesn't seem to bother me too much. Right.
Yeah. And finally, have you got a final tip for other runners?
I think that the psychological thing is not—it's not spoken about sufficiently. On all the advice that's given, the psychological, you know, if you. Because I dream a lot about running the West Highland Way. I dream a lot about finishing the West Highland, or have done in the past.
Yeah.
Whether I run it this year or not, I don't know. But dreaming and visualising, meeting your support team. Visualise that wonderful moment of running across the car park. Think about it now. This is months before. Visualise all these things. Get it into your brain. Will help you. Your brain will help you do it. Plus, after 60 miles, it all becomes mental anyway. Yeah. So you might as well visualise these things. Get your brain accustomed to meeting your team and getting to the finish. And visualise.
Right.
That's my strongest.
Yeah.
I don't have a mantra. I just think about finishing and think about positive things.
Great. Well, thank you so much for this. It's I'm sure you've really enjoyed this, and we could chat for loads more, and I know you've got loads of stories that you could tell us about from your races and other people, but that's great, and we'll definitely have you back for another one later on.
Thanks, John.
But it's been great. Thank you so much for giving us this time.
Good luck, everybody.
Right, I thought it would be really helpful to follow two people who've not done the West Highland Way race before, and to maybe interview them once a month just to get a bit of a sense of how they're feeling and where they're at. And the first person I've asked to do it, who's been willing to, is Caroline. And so it's great to have you with us, Caroline, and I hope you it'll be interesting to follow your journey through to the West Highland Way race. So first of all, can you just tell us a little bit about your background and your involvement in the race?
Well, my involvement in the race is all your fault, of course, because in 2007, Neil came to watch you run your first race, and then he very quickly realised he wanted to run it. And as soon as he started running on the trail, I quickly started running on the trail with him and knew I wanted to do it as well. So I probably first ran on the trail in 2008 and quickly realised I wanted to run the race, but it's taken a lot longer than I planned to get to this point, really just due to wanting to be really well prepared for it and sort of long-term injuries and things. So I've supported Neil twice and marshalled at Kinlochleven as well, and had a start in the place last year after getting offered a place about 6 weeks before the race, and had a go at it, but being only 5 weeks after the Catherine, that was really a bit too soon for me, and I had to pull out Ben Glass, just my hips and my knees were totally gone. If I'd been further up the trail, I would maybe have been able to walk to the finish, but it was just a bit too long to go.
Could you tell us then, what are your goals for the race? You've set off, and have you got a clear sense of what you want to do and what you want to achieve?
Well, the obvious goal is to finish, but as well as that, I do have in mind some bronze, silver and gold goals, and I am very clear on them and wanting to make the gold goal, and I would say it's been quite hard not to fixate on the goal that I really want to have, and I kind of feel at the moment that I'll be disappointed if I don't make that target, so I'm trying hard not to concentrate on that too much.
Yeah. Okay, maybe as the months go on, you might be willing to tell us what they are, but at this point, we'll leave those for yourself. Could you tell us, have you got a training plan, something that you've set out, or are you going to wing it as you go along?
Yes, I do have a training plan, with quite a bit of help from you. I've been working on sort of two medium weeks at a week with a longer long run, and then an easy week. So Saturdays, Sundays, for the first 2 weeks, I've been kind of trying to do one longish one up to maybe 20 miles or two back-to-backs, and then a long run in the West Highland Way, and then an easy run. So in January, did 30 miles. February, next week, do 36. March, I'm planning to do the whole of the Devil's Route. April, and doing the Fling, unfortunately, 2 weeks before the actual day. And then in May, I'm doing the two-day Scottish Multi day race, which will be around about 40 and 40 miles. And then during the week, I've been trying to get back to the running club on a Monday for speed and a Wednesday for a tempo run, and then just some steady stuff Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Excellent. So at this point, you've been probably since Christmas or since the new year, sort of starting on this. So how would you say your training has gone so far for the race?
Okay. It's gone really quite well so far. I would say by the end of 2011, I'd built up quite a good base and consistency by doing the Marcathon and training for the Scottish Yama Trust Ultra, which was really good for getting me out regularly and getting back up to a 28-mile long run. In January, the first 4 weeks of that training schedule, I ran 176 miles, which was good for me. And another important thing for me was to get back to the club. And I am, but it's been quite hard to get back into those harder runs during the week. And I definitely did too much in my easy week after the 30-mile training weekend at Balmahaw. So I've learnt my lesson from that one. And next month, I'll definitely be having an easy week after the long one. So because of that, I did find the first week in February quite difficult, and legs were quite tired. But getting there again now, and I've definitely never been as motivated or consistent as I am being just now. So my legs have let me down a wee bit the last week, but my head's definitely still in it.
Good. The race is just over 4 months away, and I'm sure it's in your mind a lot, thinking about it, and you find yourself just realising it's coming up and it's a big task. Would you say, what are the main sort of fears, concerns you have as you think about, you know, this task you've taken on?
Okay, well, anyone who reads my blog is going to know that the main thing that I have issue with is this throat thing that kind of gets really painful across my chest and back, and usually after about sort of 20 miles. So that's the main stumbling block that I have, and the main thing that I think would cause me not to be able to carry on. And I'm trying to sort of get it sorted out just now, but nobody seems to know what it is. So that's definitely the main thing that's worrying me. Other things, tiredness a little bit and coping with managing to eat enough, but I think I'm stubborn enough that if I get far enough up the trail before I have to stop running, that I would be able to walk to the end, and certainly I know my support crew will certainly not be letting me give up without a fight.
Great, thank you very much. So over the next few months, we'll hopefully follow Caroline's progress, and it will be great to see how that goes, and sharing those thoughts with us. So thank you very much. Lessons I've learned from the West Highland Way, number 7. This one is about gear. Now, I recognise that what the gear you carry and what type of gear you carry is very, very personal. And if you look at the start line of the West Highland Way race or any ultra race, you'll find there's a whole range of gear and stuff around. And I think the lessons I've learned about the West Highland Way is what suits me and what I've found is comfortable. At the moment, I tend to just try and run with a bum bag, a Nathan bum bag, which has got places for 2 500 mils water if I need them, and it's got 3 pockets that I can put stuff in. Normally, I take at least one or two of those off, so I've just got maybe the one at the back, which is fixed on, and I've got one water, and I've got one area which I can put other stuff in as well, like my camera or other things that I want to carry. If I'm doing a longer run and I need a rucksack, then I've got an Innovate rucksack which doesn't weigh anything, and it's got quite a bit of room and a couple of side pockets. So they're the things that I tend to do. But I was thinking more for this was more the general things about gear and lessons that I've learned over the West Highland Way. And I think one of the key things is that you must try out your gear. I think it's really important that you use the next few months, this is the first time you're doing it at the West Highland Way race, or even if you've done it before and you've got new gear, you've got to try it out before the race and get used to running with it. You might try something on in the shop, you might try something for an hour or two run, but it can be very different how it feels after 6, 7, 8, 10, 15 hours. So make sure that whatever gear you have, you're really comfortable with. I remember one West Highland Way race, literally we'd run less than half a mile, and someone just behind me, their water bottle dropped off their rucksack. Now, I assume they'd never tried it before. They'd never actually run with a water bottle in that rucksack, and it fell out. And that just seems silly to me. You know, there's certain things that you can practice and you can get right. And I think being comfortable with the gear you have, and don't try anything new on the West Highland Way race that you've not done before. And that's true, I would say, of any race, whether it's a 10K race or up to an ultra marathon, is make sure that the gear you're wearing, the shorts you're wearing, the shirt, the jacket, whatever you've got on, that you've tried it out before. So I think that the long runs you do, make sure that you try, and particularly as you get closer to the race, I often do a 2-day run in May, and that is my final dress rehearsal, really, to make sure that both my food and the gear that I'm going to wear for the race. It's all exactly the same as I'll do, and that gives me a 2-day run, 75 miles, to really test it out and to make sure it works for me for that race. And maybe the fling as well. I think sometimes in a training run it can be different to a race situation, so try it out. If you're doing the fling, try it out in the fling. And again, I've used the fling as a race in itself, but also as a bit of a dress rehearsal for the West Harlem Way race, which is normally 7 weeks later, to be able to try out those things in a race condition to see if it's comfortable there. You know, if it works for 10, 11, 12 hours in the fling, hopefully it's going to be okay for the race itself. The other thing which I think is an interesting one that I've learned over the time is just how much to carry. I remember the first West Harlem Way race, I carried stuff which I didn't really need, and it's daft. For example, when you set off from Mulgai, if you've got a backup team that are going to see you at Drimmen, it's maybe between 1:50 and two and a half hours, however long you're taking. It's in the night, so you don't need that much to take with you. And yet the amount of people I see setting off with almost a full rucksack and a full bladder with 2 litres of water in just seems really daft to me, because that's extra weight. I try and just carry as much as I need from checkpoint to checkpoint. So for that first leg, I'll have maybe half a bottle of water, 250 mils of water, which should be plenty to see me through. Over the last couple of years, I've not even had a support team at Drimmen, because I'm quite happy to get to Balmaha in one go, normally sort of 3.5 hours or so, and I might take a full water bottle there, but it's through the night, and that tends to do me quite well. And if I need, I'll take some food as well, so I'm eating every half an hour or so. But I don't need to take a lot. So I would say only carry as much as you need, really, from checkpoint to checkpoint. If you're going to see your backup team, then you can just replace things. Don't carry more than you need to. Some races obviously do have a minimum amount. I'm doing the Lakeland 100 race this year, and there's a minimum kit list that you have to carry, so I'm going to have to run with a rucksack for that one, and I've been practicing doing that, because you have to carry a full waterproof with you, doesn't matter what the weather's like, and certain other things. The West Harlem Way is a bit more relaxed in that way, in the sense that if the weather's good, then you don't need to carry full waterproof, but if you're asked to, then you need to have it available to carry with you. So it's thinking about gear, it's thinking about what is the minimum that I can get away with to be safe, but to make sure that I'm not carrying more than I need, because that's daft, really. I think one of the other things about gear, which for me is a lesson that I've learned, is make sure I can get to the things I want easily. If you have a rucksack on and you need to get something out of it, then it takes time. You've got to take it off. There's normally a chest strap, there's a waist strap, you've got to unbutton those, you've got to get it off, you've got to make sure it doesn't catch your Garmin watch and stop your watch, because that's annoying. And all that takes a bit of time if you want just something simple out of the rucksack. I try as much as possible only to open the rucksack when I'm having a proper stop at a checkpoint. If I'm stopping there for 2, 3, 4 minutes, I'll use that time to get stuff in and out. The rest of it I try and have in pockets so that I can quickly get hold of things and be able to eat. And particularly drinking, that's why I like the Nathan Watt, the belt, because I can just whip out the water, have a drink, put it back in again, and it takes seconds, and I do it. Whereas if it takes a little bit more effort, the temptation is, as the race gets longer and you get more and more tired, that you can't be bothered because it's too much effort, so therefore you don't, and you don't eat, and it's a downward spiral. So I would say having gear which is available to get to be able to get the things you need is a really important thing. And I think the lessons that I've learned over the time with gear is about those things, is just finding what's suitable for me. Sometimes I watch others run in, and I pick up different tips of what they try out and what works for them. And you learn, you try things, and if it works, then you do it. If it doesn't work, then you go for something that does for you. But certainly, the lessons I've learned about gear is making sure you try it out, making sure you don't carry more than you need, because that's excess weight, and make sure that it's you can get hold of things easily, otherwise you probably won't use them. So this lesson from the West Harlem Way is gear and the best way to carry stuff and to use it. lessons I've learned from the West Harlem Way race number 8. This one's about feet. The very first race I did in 2007, I suffered, as quite a few people did, with blisters, and have done. And just a few blisters, but it certainly really sore on my feet. Now, actually, when I think back, those had lots of blisters all over my feet. And the next year, I tried like lots of things to learn from that and try different things. And I remember I went on a two-day run, and I was sharing a room at Bridge of Orchie with Hugh. And on the second day of the run, I watched him get his kit ready and getting his shoes on. And he just put loads and loads of pseudocreme all over his feet. The whole feet, all of his feet were just white with this pseudocreme. I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Oh, it's great, this stuff. I've never had a blister since." And so I started doing that from that point onwards. I must admit, I tend to just do it around my toes because that's the place where I tend to get the problems rather than the whole feet. But I find the pseudocreme, it's a thicker paste than Vaseline or that sort of stuff. I find Vaseline, it's a bit slimy, but the pseudocreme is a bit thicker and it just seems to give a good barrier to my feet. And then what I tend to do is I wear a thin pair of ankle cotton socks next to my feet, and then I just put an ordinary pair of sports socks that I just buy from Sports World or whatever. Fairly cheap ones, but just decent sort of black socks that go on top. And I found I've not really had problems with blisters since. Having said that, it was a bit of a problem last year in the race because it was so wet and my feet got so wet that I still had a few blisters then. But generally, I've done quite well with that idea. I know you can buy these specialist two-layer socks, but they're pretty expensive. And I remember I had one pair and they didn't last that long because I just went through the first layer. Whereas the system I use now, the cheap socks, the cotton socks don't cost much now. They do the outer ones. But I think it's the pseudocreme which is the key to it, because they just form a bit of a barrier all around your toes. And I make sure that the pseudocreme is in between all my toes and it's covered. And so it's a bit of a ritual now before I go for a long run. Basically anything over a couple of hours, I'll put pseudocreme on my toes. And as I said, I've not really had problems with blisters since. So that's certainly a lesson that I've learnt on the West Harlem Way, to how to look after your feet. Use pseudocreme. Hope you enjoyed this fifth podcast, and there's been quite a bit of information on there and stuff which I'm sure you've enjoyed listening to. There will be another one next week, and very interesting. This one is a slightly different interview. Marco and Thomas went for a run and they decided to do their interview as they ran, so that will be quite fun. So I'll be putting that one together for next week, so that's something else for you to look forward to. So I hope you've enjoyed this podcast, and remember Duncan, what he was saying in his interview, the importance of visualising and getting your head around this race, and I hope that this podcast has helped you to do that.